Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Get this, about 140 million women give birth every year worldwide. That's according to the World Health Organization. The WHO says approximately 830 women every day die from preventable causes related to pregnancy and childbirth. Health experts say maternal death is on the rise here in the United States. Each year, 700 to 1,200 women died from pregnancy or childbirth complications, and black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die of pregnancy or delivery complications more than white women. Additionally, more than 1,000 babies die prematurely each year in North America. Now, what can women do to combat these statistics and increase their odds of having a healthy pregnancy and childbirth experience? Well, we will discuss this on today's Health Chat and more. And joining us via phone from New York City is Dr. Keisha Gaither. She's a double board certified physician in OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine and director of perinatal services at Lincoln Medical and Mental Health Center in the Bronx, New York. Dr. Gaither, welcome to the program.
Good day. Thank you so much for having me. I truly appreciate it. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Can you hear me now?
Dr. Gaither, are you there?
I'm here. Can you not hear me?
Okay.
Hello.
I think
I'm having
a little trouble hearing Dr. Gaither. I know she's there. Thank you so much for joining us. Can you say something? Let me see if I can hear you.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, now I can hear you.
Now you can hear me. I don't know what's going on, but I thank you so much for having me on your show, and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It was a little technical difficulty there. Sorry about that. So thank you so much again for joining us, Dr. Gaither. I think these statistics are really disconcerting when I read what is happening globally, and even to think that in the United States, women are dying more than we would imagine. So let me have your take on the statistics, the big picture. What is happening?
I think that a lot of things go into what we're seeing. I think it's multifactorial. Let's start it with some of the things that I personally see. Number one, we see a lot of women who are coming late to prenatal care, who have comorbid conditions such as diabetes and hypertension, which if they were to come earlier, might certainly make a difference as far as their perinatal outcome. So if there's a comorbid condition that a woman has, like diabetes, hypertension, HIV, as soon as they become pregnant, it is really helpful to come and see the physician right when you find out you're pregnant, because there's certain things that can affect not only mother, but also baby. That's the first thing that I see. The second thing that I see is there is a difference depending on where you are living as to vitamin deficiencies that you may or may not have, which correlate with certain obstetric outcomes and even medical outcomes. For instance, vitamin D levels. People of color tend to have very low vitamin D levels, and vitamin D is a vitamin that is incredibly important in a lot of the functionality of our bodies, for our cardiovascular health, for our mental health, and now there is evidence that low vitamin D levels correlate with an increased incidence of women of color having preterm births. Okay, and as we know, preterm deliveries confer a high morbidity and mortality to the surviving neonate. They have a whole host of adverse outcomes affecting their breathing, you know, with respiratory distress syndrome, with their vision. They have retinopathy of prematurity, with their ability to eat. You know, they have issues with their intestines being able to digest food. So You know, those are two of the main things that I see. Now, other things that go along with preterm labor. Again, I think that's a multifactorial issue. I think infections play a very large role in its incidence. And again, there's research that it's coming out where there's more and more attention being focused on the microbiome of the genital tract of women. There is a distinct difference that can be found in some of the bacteria that are growing in some of the genital tracts of women of color versus other ethnicities. Now, whether or not this plays into genetic influence, that is yet to be determined. But that certainly is a factor in what we see as far as preterm birth is concerned.
So why is there such a disparity when we look at the maternal death rates among women here? I know you talked about some of the reasons why, you know, like coming late for prenatal care and deficiencies.
Right.
But in terms of the reason why, for example, they even come late, why do you think that?
Again, it's multifactorial causes. Some women just don't believe in coming to the doctor. Some women have issues with insurance.
Okay.
Some women have issues with daycare. Some women, if they are, you know, not naturalized to the United States, fear being in the quote-unquote system, fearing deportation. Some women are substance abusers. Some women have had not so great experiences mm-hmm. with their medical providers. You know, I think it has to be acknowledged that for some there is a sort of intrinsic bias where, you know, physicians of a certain ethnicity have certain biases against their patients of certain ethnicities, and so they might not be have the same level of oversight that they might have for, say, someone that looks like them, or they have certain perceptions and, you know, have a limited capacity to really, I guess, ingratiate themselves and bond with the patient. And so that has to be acknowledged as part of it, too. There are some conditions that, you know, certain providers haven't seen before, and so clinical presentations might be missed. I think one of the clearest, clearest examples of this was when Venus Williams recently delivered, and she had to literally tell her doctors, you guys need to do, you know, something to evaluate because I think I'm having a clot in my lungs. I mean, she had to tell them,
yeah.
Otherwise, there's a question as to whether or not that would have even been evaluated. So
Wow. There
are a whole host of, I think, multifactorial things that go into the outcomes that we see.
Mm-hmm.
From a perinatal perspective, the highest incidences of morbidity and mortality in the childbirth arena fall around hemorrhage and fall around hypertensive disorders, you know, particularly preeclampsia. I've written several articles on preeclampsia, and the main thing that I want people to take away from that is that preeclampsia is the great imitator. It can imitate a lot of common things that we see. For instance, if you have a headache and you have a really bad headache, well, sometimes that could be attributed to having a migraine headache,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes it can be attributed to one of the warning signs that preeclampsia might show you that you're getting ready to have a seizure, you know, related to the disease process in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you can have abdominal pain. Well, that could be abdominal pain. Maybe you ate something that wasn't so good, or it could be a sign and symptom that you're having liver dysfunction, and your liver, excuse me, might be getting ready to rupture, which, again, is one of the classic findings that go along with this disease entity. So for some providers who haven't seen these types of, I can't say anomalies, but uncommon presentations
yes.
of disease entities, particularly of preeclampsia, which, you know, again, it imitates a lot of things. You can have an adverse outcome from that.
Interesting. And we want to find out more about what preeclampsia is. However, we're going to take a short break. And there is this report that from VOA's Carol Pearson that takes a look at the global issue of maternal and child health through the WHO. Let's take a mm-hmm. listen, and we'll come back and get your reaction, Doctor. We'll be right back.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This is the sound you want to hear in the delivery room. It means a newborn can breathe. If fluid fills a baby's airway, well-trained staff can clear it and save the baby's life. In a healthcare facility with electricity and running water, doctors and trained attendants can give a woman a life-saving blood transfusion if she hemorrhages after giving birth. They can perform a cesarean section to save the lives of both mother and child. In some countries, hospitals don't always have electricity or running water or enough trained midwives or nurses to save lives when things go wrong. Dr. Flavia Bustreo is the Assistant Director General for Family, Women, and Children's Health at the World Health Organization. In a Skype interview with VOA, Bustreo spoke of the pressing need to address this issue.
In the year 2016, we have almost 6 million children under the age of 5 years that lose their life. And also we have almost 300,000 women that lose their life due to complication of childbirth.
The World Health Organization and UNICEF are working with 9 Asian and African countries to make sure every woman receives good care throughout her pregnancy, delivery, and post-pregnancy period, and that all babies get quality care before, during, and after birth. That means healthcare facilities have to be upgraded or built with their own sources of electricity, and the people who staff these facilities need better training. The risk is greatest for mothers around the time of delivery. For babies, the risk of dying is greatest in the first few days of life, but they're also at risk during their first few months. Some of the effort to lower that risk involves convincing women to have their babies in a birthing facility rather than at home. Bustreo says the 9 countries involved will create their own plans to achieve these goals.
The dynamics that we are trying to create is to have the partners and players within each country to create their targets so that they own those targets and they are also responsible and accountable to their own population for delivery.
Bustreo is leading teams in Bangladesh and India, in Ivory Coast, Ethiopia, Ghana, Malawi, Nigeria, Tanzania, and Uganda. The ultimate goal is to end preventable deaths of mothers and babies. But first, these countries are focusing on reducing maternal and infant death by half within the next 5 years. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
So, Dr. Gaither, you heard the report looking at what is happening in low and middle-income countries. And I have
right.
to admit that I was a bit surprised to see that in the United States. Again, going back to what I said earlier in my introduction, there are women that may go through some similar experience in terms of not having a healthy pregnancy. So let me have your reaction on what you heard and what ultimately can be done for women that are in low-income settings in terms of solutions.
Well, you know, I think there are a number of things that are available in the United States, and I'm not quite sure how it works in other countries, but certainly in the United States there is such a thing as WIC, Women Infant Child Services, whereby the mothers will have have an entry point, per se, into prenatal care, into healthy choices to be made as far as their medications are concerned, and, you know, particular follow-up for a certain period of time after the baby has been delivered. Every hospital within the United States, for the most part, has social services programs which can direct mothers to, you know, prenatal care, to resources that might be necessary for them, say, for instance, as far as mental health, as far as assisting with transportation. So those are all things that are readily available. For grassroots types of endeavors, a lot of facilities connect with churches within the community, and the churches serve to be the mouthpiece, for the most part, I know my church does, to encourage women to have prenatal care and direct them accordingly to where they can, you know, have care and where they can get the particular services. There are certain television stations that are predicated to putting the word out as far as what prenatal services are available and where the women can go and get them. The hospital where I currently am serving is certainly one that has a very extensive community-based type of approach, which facilitates the resultant care in the demographic that we serve. They have a lot of outreach programs. They have a lot of programs where we are working with doulas to assist with care of the pregnant mother and afterwards. So there are a lot of things that are available that people, you know, can avail themselves of to assist in their prenatal care and their postpartum care as well to afford a good perinatal outcome for mom and baby.
Okay. And we'll take another short break just for the news, and we'll come back to have more of our conversation with Dr. Gaither and look at how pregnant women can stay healthier. We'll be right back. It's now time for the news with Imutinyan Ijabi.
The World Health Organization is warning 1 in 10 people globally, or more than 90 million, are at risk of disabling hearing loss by 2050 unless preventive action is taken now. The WHO reports 466 million people around the world currently suffer from disabling hearing loss. The annual cost for countries in direct health service and lost productivity resulting from this disability is estimated at $750 billion. Problems resulting from hearing loss are expected to rise because of growing and aging population, a population that is expected to reach 9 billion by 2050. However, the risk in the aging population does not mean that an increase in hearing loss is inevitable. The International Health Body says there are many factors besides aging that affect hearing loss, such as infectious diseases in childhood, exposure to loud sound or noise at workplaces. Many of these causes are preventable, and WHO reports about 60% of hearing loss in children can be prevented. Several southern African states have banned processed meat from South Africa after a deadly listeria outbreak there. The government of South Africa says the sausage known as polony was to blame for the listeria poisoning that has killed 180 people. The country has advised people not to eat any processed meat. There have been 948 cases of listeria poisoning in South Africa reported since January 2017, which the UN calls the largest outbreak ever. The listeria's bacteria is hard to test for, as it is not homogeneously distributed in food. And finally, researchers from the George Institute for Global Health says women with bigger waist relatively to their hips are more at risk of heart attack than men of a similar apple shape. They conducted a study which has shown that waist-to-hip ratio is a better heart attack predictor than general obesity. 18% stronger than body mass index in women and 6% in men. The report found a high BMI was linked to heart disease risk in both sexes. The researchers interviewed nearly 500 UK adults aged 40 to 69. The study is published in the Journal of American Heart Association and used the UK Biobank resource. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news. Lenore, back to you.
Welcome back to Health Chat. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing maternal and childhood health. And our guest expert is Dr. Keisha Gaither. She's a double board certified physician in OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine and director of perinatal services at Lincoln Medical and Mental Health Center in the Bronx in New York. Now, Dr. Gaither, you said something earlier that really stuck to my mind. You talked about vitamin D level and how important it was. Tell us about what the role of vitamin D in pregnancy and how do we get vitamin D? And then the other question would be, how do we know we are deficient of vitamin D? But let's talk first about the role of vitamin D.
Okay, well, vitamin D is one of the only vitamins that humans make in their skin. People of color have lower concentrations of vitamin D, that just comes naturally. Now, if you are living in an environment, in an urban environment where there are lots of tall buildings, where you're taking, you know, cars and subways and working in an isolated environment where there's no light coming in, that's further going to decrease your vitamin D levels, okay? So that we'll just leave that on the side as some baseline information.
Okay.
Now, how does vitamin D function in your body? Vitamin D is important for a lot of the functionality of our body. It's correlated with the ability to have depressed moods if it's deficient. It's correlated with poor cardiovascular health, increased risk of coronary artery disease. It's correlated, obviously, with bone development. Particularly when you're pregnant, you know, the fetus requires that for its you know, bone matrix and to develop normally. And recently there have been some studies out of South Carolina which have correlated low vitamin D levels with an increased incidence of preterm labor. So having said that, vitamin D levels typically for normal values run about 40 to 80 microliters. The average person of color tends to have values that are significantly under what one would expect. How do we find out whether or not we're low? Well, there are a number of ways to do it. One, you can ask your doctor to draw your levels, or there is a wonderful site by the name of nutrientpower.org, which you can not only obtain your own kit to draw your own levels, but it has a number of very useful tips on certain vitamin deficiencies. And there's also the opportunity to enroll in what is basically a nationwide study looking at vitamin D levels and certain outcomes. I have begun, since I've gotten here, to assess vitamin D levels in my pregnant patients, and I would say that about 90% of them are deficient. So all of my pregnant ladies who I have found that have, you know, vitamin D deficiency are supplemented. Vitamin D is an inexpensive vitamin that you can get over the counter in preparations of 1,000 to 2,000 milliunits per, you know, which you can take per day, and it's a relatively inexpensive way to, I guess, improve overall homeostasis within the body, leading to improved cardiovascular health, improved mental health, improved bone development, particularly if you're pregnant, and certainly as a very inexpensive aid to precluding your incidence of preterm labor. More research has to be done specifically as to how it acts to prevent preterm labor, but certainly preliminary studies out of South Carolina are reassuring and serve as a jumping off point for further research to look into that particular thing. But if it helps to prevent it, I'm certainly all for it.
So it seems to me that it's a combination of issues, as you explained it so well and so clearly. But one of the fundamental issues seems to be education. Like, women perhaps are not aware of what to expect when they are pregnant. Even women that have already had babies, there are still a lack of education somewhere, it seems. So what steps need to be made when it comes to educating more women on how to avoid preterm birth and other common complications during pregnancy? It is true that once they get to the doctor, they will have the right information. But let's look at different other options, perhaps.
Well, one way that I personally kind of work to promote education is by social media. I mean, most people have a cell phone or some type of electronic device, mm-hmm. which allows them to, you know, be connected in Facebook, Twitter. However, I make it a point to talk a lot about health issues for women, particularly as it relates to the maternal child arena, and particularly as it relates to environmental and public health issues. So I'll just kind of put it out there. I do have a Facebook page, which is Keisha Gaither. I have a Twitter handle, which is at Keisha Gaither MD. And I have a web page, which is www.keishagaither.com. So I think a lot of physicians now and health organizations are moving more away from TV and radio, which are still good, but more towards social media, where people can basically get the information that they need at the touch of their fingertips.
And let me just spell your name so that they spell it correctly as they look you up. It's KeishaGaither, Keisha Gaither. And this is what you mentioned in terms of finding you on social media. So, Dr. Gaither, we're running out of time. But before we finish, I just want to have your final thought in terms of moving forward, what women should do, perhaps the first questions they should ask their doctor when they just find out that they are pregnant, or the first steps they should take in terms of ensuring that the pregnancy goes well.
Well, as soon as you become pregnant, go to your doctor. If you're a diabetic and you're thinking about becoming pregnant, try and get your blood sugars in control before you even get pregnant, because high blood sugars can confer upon your baby a host of things, inclusive of congenital anomalies of the baby's brain, heart, and lower limbs if mother is poorly controlled when she conceives. So that's the main thing I would say. Get early prenatal care. Ask your doctor about your vitamin D level. Vitamin D is very inexpensive, and it confers a good deal of health benefits if you take it. Be in it for your prenatal care. Make sure you're compliant with your visits, compliant with any fetal testing that your doctor says you need to ensure that you have a good outcome. So I think those are the pearls of wisdom that I would kind of put out there for the ladies that are listening.
Dr. Gaither, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really a pleasure and an honor.
It was our pleasure. And that was Dr. Keisha Gaither, double board certified physician in OBGYN. And thanks to all of you for joining us today and taking part in the program every week. If you want to know more, check us out on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Vongani. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news.